If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we're talking about wrestling on the Power Slam podcast by the king of the Power Slam, the figurative one, not the literal one, Mr. Finn Martin of Power Slam fame. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm very well, Kenny. How are you this week? More importantly, never mind about me, you're the important one.
Well, in theory, I'm good. Yeah, I'm decent. We announced the Awesome Kong tour last week, so we've got that coming up in August. You know, just a kind of small tour to get us back into things. Working on some stuff for later on in the year, so that's pretty good. I'm pretty decent. I should give a quick plug.
I should mention, Kenny, they've just released the trailer, haven't they, for Glow Season 3.
They have, which is coming out August 9th on Netflix, so 10 days before the show. She's back as the Welfare Queen on Netflix. She actually just did a video online. If you go on her Twitter, which is Mean Queen K, there's a link to a Deadline Hollywood article where she does a sit-down interview about Glow and all that kind of stuff with a guy from Netflix. So it's pretty interesting to check out. It's like a 15-minute interview, so I would recommend that. But yes, I would also say, you know, please check out our Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where every week Finn and I will cover Retro Heat, where we look back at the Sunday Night Heats to accompany Retro Raw. We do a bonus Power Slam overrun, where we look at old Power Slam issues and bonus stuff. Finn does bonus articles. He's just put up a new Q&A, issue 4, where he delves into the Firefly Funhouse, Sting, WrestleMania, AEW in the UK, and more. So also weekly reviews of Thunder from 1998, with Ollie and the Kayfabe Jobber, NXT reviews, and much, much more. So do check us out over there, as it means a lot to us being able to do all of our content. So got to get that plug out of the way, Finn, haven't we?
Well, absolutely, yeah. I know those guys are huge fans of Thunder.
It's very funny that they watch Thunder without watching the Nitros. So they're piecing it all together. They'll watch the Thunders and the pay-per-views. So it's interesting to listen to how Thunder comes across without the parallel Nitros that happen at the same time. We do need to start off with some sad news. The death of Lionheart, Adrian McCallum, who is the ICW world champion, passed away yesterday morning. The news broke last night. Pretty sad news. He was only 36. How familiar were you with Lionheart? Any kind of memories of him? Anytime someone, you know, dies that young, it's pretty tragic.
Oh, just awful. Yeah, I just read the news. I think I spoke to him, maybe twice. We did an interview with him after he suffered the neck injury on the Preston City Wrestling Show in 2014? I think it was, wasn't
2014,
it?
2014, yeah.
Yeah. Greg Lambert did that interview, as I recall. That was on the Styles Clash, wasn't it? That's when he suffered the injury.
Yeah,
and it was devastating, and he was told that he was very, very lucky to survive that. And he was able to make a comeback, which, you know, was quite astonishing, really. So, I saw him live a few times. Obviously, he was a regular on the British circuit for many years. You know, he was a good performer. You know, he was really good as a heel, really good as a face as well. You know, just really, what can you say about someone who's dying at age 36? It's just terrible, Kenny.
Yeah,
you know, you must have known him. You must have encountered him many times.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that we were good friends or anything. Like, we knew each other. We had each other on Facebook. We'd bump into each other once in a while. He was very supportive of Inside the Ropes. You know, he was very kind about us when not everybody would be, because you know yourself, when you were starting Power Slam, when you start, people are quite wary of you initially, because they don't know, you know, they don't know if you are smart to wrestling or what kind of person you are. So, you know, he yeah, you know, and I made sure to reach out to him, you know, because he actually famously last year took the Styles Clash again in a match. And I made sure to reach out to him and kind of say, you know, you should be really proud of yourself for sort of having the guts to do that. Because, you know, sometimes when you get into a hole, that's there. So I, I spoke to him a few times and stuff, and I really had a lot of time for him. And he came to our Chris Jericho show last year, and we managed to get a really good photo of them together.
Yeah, I saw that.
So yeah, it's really sad, and you know, I'm sure information is going to come out and stuff, but it's a shame. It's a real shame. At 36, you can't really. There's not really much you can say. It's really sad.
But, I mean, you know, two in succession with Ashley Azaro Dane. She was only 39. And then Adrian down at 36. I mean, you know, it's, yeah, pro wrestling's, obviously, it's, you know, there are more important things than pro wrestling, but just two people who associate with pro wrestling dying in quite rapid succession at a young age, you know, kind of reminds you of the bad old days, doesn't it?
It does unfortunately remind you of that. But, you know, I think that, I don't really want to say any more about it than what's out there, but it's really sad. So I hope that I feel really bad for the people who are around him. I know he had a girlfriend of like 3 years, and you know, his family and all that kind of stuff. So it's an eye opener, you know. And I know what it's like I know what it's like to feel that the world's just kind of too much and stuff like that. So I feel really bad that it's happened, but. Yeah, there you go. So anyway, we'll move on to lighter things. Well, I mean, I don't know if it is lighter. The WWE TV this week. I thought Raw and SmackDown again were very, very pedestrian. I thought that Raw was better this week than it was last week, but still, I mean, we're limping into stomping ground just with no sort of like excitement. Do you think Raw and SmackDown did anything this week to kind of pep people up? And what were your thoughts on the show?
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like there's any great sense of urgency that WWE was keen to come up with a final last week push. I mean, I just didn't feel it at all from either Raw or SmackDown. And having gone on the Ticketmaster page and just seeing how many tickets were available at the beginning of the week for the Stomping Grounds event. Just extraordinary how many floor seats were available. And I know they're doing all sort of 2-for-1 offers and all these other type of gimmicks to try and shift the tickets and get people in there. And you're thinking, well, the way to do it is to really, you know, give the product like a boost and just really get some pep in your step, WWE. Just felt like another kind of wasted week of WWE TV, Kenny, if I'm honest. I mean, when they announced that Seth Rollins would battle Daniel Bryan on the program on Raw, I just wrote, why? Why is this match occurring? Why is it taking place? I know Daniel Bryan had done an interview with, I think it was Jimmy Jacobs. I think it was this week, in which he revealed that he was, once his current contract expired, he was no longer going to wrestle full time because it was not something that he wanted to do anymore, but he would continue to wrestle periodically. That's some distance in the future. So why give this match away? I just don't understand it. They've got so few big time marquee matches that could headline events, and they just threw this one away. And what's more, it had a finish, had a pinfall finish. I was just astounded. What did you think of that, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching Raw, and I just, you know, the idea that a Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan match would not excite you in any way is quite baffling to think about.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I've said this before, Kofi Kingston is not working for me as WWE champion. I think that his run is making the belt feel very mid-card. And when you look at the idea that Kofi Kingston is the world champion, he hasn't changed his character one bit, he hasn't elevated his game one bit, and then you've got Daniel Bryan as a tag team champion who might end up on the pre-show, you just think, what are you doing? Like, what's this? Is what you kept him for?
Yeah,
you know, and I mean, I've got to think that if I'm Daniel Bryan right now, and you know, we're sitting here in June of 2019, in September that'll be 1 year into his 3 year deal. I've got to think that he's gonna and very seriously consider in September 2021 reconsider his options, because there's going to finally be, you know, or all things lead us to believe there is going to be a serious alternative.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that I don't think people, I mean, I don't know if people realize just how many people who are fairly big names in WWE are unhappy and could just go. You know, that's kind of where things are now, and that's not a good place to be, especially when you've, you know, somebody asked yesterday on our Facebook community, you know, what dream matches did WWE have left? And I can't really think of any.
No.
That's not a good thing for me to be thinking. And again, I've said this a million times, we're now sitting as we record this on the 20th of June. SummerSlam is 7 weeks away. And does anybody have any matches they want to see at SummerSlam? Is anybody talking about it? Like, usually when we're at this point, we're like, okay, well, you know, we're going to have this at SummerSlam, this is going to be really exciting or whatever, and nobody is talking about it. And that's really worrying.
It is. I mean, I've heard it rumoured that they may be preparing Shane McMahon for a heavyweight title run, and that he may be the one to dethrone Kofi Kingston, setting up Shane McMahon versus Roman Reigns for the title at SummerSlam. And given the way everything's playing out, I actually can see that outcome. That does feel like the direction they're heading in, because then you're gonna
also have backstage. You're gonna have a lot of people who might not be vocalizing it, but are gonna be very unhappy that, you know, they've got this wild card rule, which means that less people get on TV, and then one of the biggest pushes is going to Shane McMahon.
Yeah,
I like Shane McMahon as a performer, but I don't think the current role that he's in is a good fit for him.
Well, I mean, he's there. Center, front and center, he is the star of the team. There's Shane, Drew, and there's Elias. And it feels like Shane is the focus of this, rather than Drew McIntyre, who to me still hasn't really recovered from that defeat at the hands of Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I mean, I find it just very hard to take him seriously as a top guy now. I'm hoping he's something huge is going to happen for him at Stomping Grounds on Sunday. Probably won't, but I'm hoping for that outcome, because he bloody needs it. But it's just like Shane just feels like the priority. It feels like he's the one that the machine is trying to make into a title contender, and somebody that we can... well, it's obviously he's going to be a heel. He's going to be like kind of a cowardly heel in the role. So it's not like he's going to be some, you know, if he does defeat Kofi Kingston, there'll be all sorts of skullduggery involved, of course. So it will be a different type of heel reign to, say, if Drew McIntyre would defeat Kofi Kingston. But it does feel like that's the direction of travel right now for WWE. And that doesn't appeal to me at all. And again, all roads are leading to Roman Reigns being champion again. And I can see that. And then presumably Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, because they feel like the two biggest stars in the company, or at least the two people that WWE has put on a pedestal above everyone else. And we don't need to see that match ever again. But I just feel like that's where we're going. But you're right, SummerSlam, what the hell does WWE have that anyone's really going to be that bothered about? I don't know. I mean, another match on Raw this week that I just could only shake my head in disbelief out, because it kind of felt predictable now, was we had a fatal five-way elimination match between Miz, Bobby Lashley, Cesaro, Ricochet and Braun Strowman. Why did all these people have to be eliminated from this match? You know, like Braun power slammed and pinned Cesaro fairly easily. Braun then eliminated Lashley. I mean, at one point, Lashley felt like somebody who could have been built up into, you know, a credible opponent for Brock Lesnar. And now he just feels like another guy. It doesn't really matter. It's like the machine's just squeezed the life out of him. And then after that, Cesaro and Lashley, who had been eliminated by this point, they then helped Ricochet pin Strowman with Ricochet's full awareness. And you're like, hold on a minute, Ricochet's supposed to be a babyface. What's he doing allowing these two heels to aid him in a pinfall victory over Strowman? I mean, that didn't make any sense to me at all. And okay, it was designed to protect Strowman, but couldn't like Lashley and Cesaro beating Strowman down outside the ring as Ricochet was lying in the ring and not aware of what was going on, then shoved Strowman in, and then Ricochet scored the pin, not aware of all this chicanery that had taken place outside the ring. That's the way it should have taken place. And instead, we had Ricochet really scoring a heel win. In the end, he pinned Miz to earn the match with, this was all designed to set up Samoa Joe's opponent at Stomping Ground. So Ricochet did pin the Miz to win the match. But it just felt like Ricochet didn't really earn it. Are you with me there, Kenny?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's also... Because you know how like you would categorize me as like a WWE fan for life kind of thing? That's kind of what you would, you know... I'm not like a lot of other people, like you, who checks out Japanese stuff a lot and all that kind of thing. And I'll try my best to look at other stuff, but I'm finding it, I've never been so disenfranchised with stuff. And I think it's because I can't see where the excitement's going to be. You know, I think a lot of what kept me going the last 3 or 4 years was where things will go when this person comes up from NXT, or, you know, well, they'll finally get behind this guy. And now it's just like everybody kind of means nothing. And that's a shame, because there's so many talented guys. Drew McIntyre is a guy who should be a top guy, and they've just not built him to be that. You know, they've got him being Shane's lackey, and I don't really know what you said before, you know, if they did a month of like just good storytelling, that it would sort of save the day. I don't even know if that is enough right now, because I feel like there's so many people who don't mean anything. It's not like they need to get 3 or 4 people over. They need to really get everybody over all over again.
Yeah.
And that's an issue, because you've got all the guys who've come up from NXT, like Ricochet, The Revival, and all these people who are, you know, still trying to get, you know, scrape above the parapet and get over. You've got the guys who have been over before, like Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt and all these people who are... I mean, Bray Wyatt, he's kind of the exception right now. And I do want to give a shout-out to Terry Johnson on our Facebook community, because Sondra and I talked about it yesterday. We couldn't remember who had come up with it. He came up with a tremendous idea of what they should do at Stomping Grounds. And he said that Corbin should come out for the main event and announce his referee. And the referee would be Bray Wyatt, you know, the happy-go-lucky, you know, kiddie Bray Wyatt that he is in Firefly Funhouse. And he would be that way the whole match. He would be very animated, blah, blah, blah. And he would count the pinfall, 1, 2, 3 for Seth Rollins. And as he raises his hand, the lights go out. And when they come back on, he's now the evil, maniacal Bray Wyatt. And he takes out Seth Rollins. Now, that one thing would make you want to tune into Raw. Because the one character that we're all kind of invested in right now, you know, you said a thing... in the Q&A, which people should absolutely check out over on Patreon, just to give kind of one little line from it, you said, that Wyatt has been so unconventionally sinister in his nightmarish videos has resurrected his WWE career against my predictions, I should add.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's turning people's minds on him. So, to me, that's the kind of step you need to take, because everybody's talking about Wyatt, focus on him first and make sure that you take care of that and build from there. Because right now, I mean, I can't see any... I'm more excited to watch Fyter Fest at the end of the month than I am watching, the pay-per-view on Sunday, because I feel when I watch Fyter Fest, I know that everybody who's working on that show is going to be giving it their all from behind the scenes, on camera, to make that show work and to get people watching. With Stomping Grounds, it feels very missable.
It does. And I mean, it is a real shame. I mean, there was like things on this show that kind of gave you a glimmer of hope. I mean, AJ Styles returned, who's backstage with Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson.
But how many times have we seen that, for example? Like, how many times have we seen either Balor or AJ be involved with the club as if it's going to go somewhere and then it inevitably goes nowhere? You know, people are not programmed. People are programmed now when they see that, which used to excite you to go, oh, it's never going to go anywhere, though.
Well, and here we go. Styles says to Gallows and Karl Anderson, you need to get serious. And then they have a match with the Usos, And then the Usos win, Gallows and Anderson lose. Backstage, AJ Styles looks disappointed. And it's because Gallows and Anderson have been treated like jobbers now for so long that who can remember when they weren't, that even if they were to receive a sustained push, how long would it take to rebuild confidence and faith in that act? And in the process, you'd probably end up devaluing Styles rather than elevating Gallows and Anderson. And that's where they're at right now. The whole machine, the whole system should be designed to elevate people. I mean, obviously not everyone can be a star, but when someone wins, the idea is that that victory takes that act somewhere. And you watch this week's Raw. I mean, Heath Slater was backstage. He goes up to Shane McMahon and says, "Oh, I need a pay rise." And he's, wait, he's supposed to be a WWE superstar. Is he not getting paid well? I thought that just was bizarre.
Well, that's like the whole, they do these ridiculous angles about, like, you know, oh, I've the Big Show's lost all his money. Well, how? Like, yeah. These are supposed to be, you know, because isn't the idea that you're supposed to make it feel like these are, you know, athletes who are paid millions and they are big names, they're big, because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, do people not pay and watch big stars? That's what they want to see?
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, it's, I mean, Heath Slater, I did enjoy the story they did a few years ago when he was seeking a contract and, you know, he had all the kids were there and that was funny and he wanted the above ground pool and him and Rhino were a really funny double act. I mean, that was, they really did strike gold there as a mid-card act. That was a lot of fun. But Slater really hasn't done a whole lot. I mean, I know him and Rhino then had that little push and he had a lot of goodwill and this was something that could have gone much further than it did and he kind of lost interest in it and Slater's been floundering ever since. And here he was coming, oh, I need a pay rise. It's, well, why do you need a pay rise? Are you not under contract? We remember that storyline. So that didn't, there was no explanation offered as usual. And then Drew McIntyre's like, oh, you and Heath, we go back years. You know, I really feel for your mate and all this. And you know Drew's going to attack him. And then he did attack him. And what was the point of that? Was that supposed to be a heat builder for Drew? Is that the best they can do? I wonder if it made more sense if Heath Slater had some sort of connection with Roman Reigns, but he doesn't. So, you know, if Heath Slater and Roman Reigns were pals, then you could sort of understand why Drew would have done that, but they're not. So what was the point of that? And then later in the show, we had Roman Reigns out and he just smashed them all, didn't he? He just absolutely beat the hell out of them all. Beat down the Revival, beat down Shane, beat down Drew. And it just felt so predictable and humdrum and, I just not. I mean, who really cares about Roman Reigns? You know, I have a real hard time connecting with Roman Reigns on any level. I mean, obviously he's the big star and the machine's been behind him and everything.
But everybody who knows him says that Roman Reigns is a really cool guy, but he's never allowed to be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he just feels so one-dimensional and bland and just uninteresting. I mean, there's just no substance to him as a character. And then he's just destroyed all the guys he was supposed to think are the top heels. I just found it just really perplexing. Also we had Kevin and Sammy. I mean, also we talked earlier about the wild card rule. How many people from SmackDown were on this program? There was loads. And it's like they barely even acknowledge it now. It's such a muddled shambles. You know, it's like the whole superstar shakeup has just been like the biggest bust of the year. It's just been, what a wasted opportunity. I mean, it's now very difficult to name who is attached to which brand because there's so much cross-pollination on such a regular basis that there's no real distinction of who wrestles on which colour. So, and then, you know, we had the main event there of Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins. Actually was a good match. Of course it was going to be a good match. But it just felt like they really just threw it away. This could have been a SummerSlam main event. This could have been huge. And it just feels like they can't go back to it now for probably 6 months or so, because he'd given this away as a raw main event with really no story behind it.
I do want to ask you about something that Lance Storm had said about the Firefly Funhouse. Have you heard about this?
No.
Okay, I'm going to read you what he says, and hopefully I can find it here pretty easily. Okay, here's what he had to say about the Firefly Funhouse. And do you think there's any credence to what he's saying? He said on Figure Four Daily last week with Brian Alvarez, "Correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't the writers making fun of Vince McMahon right in front of his nose with these segments? The Firefly Funhouse is the WWE. The opening segment is, 'We're glad you're a friend, it's a friendship that will never end.' And Bray keeps doing the, 'Let me be the light and I'll show you the way.' And then all of the skits are all the inside complaints about the company. There was the husky pig that was eating too much, and it's like you'll never get a push because you're a fat slob. There was the buzzard that ate the rabbit and ate up his own to get ahead and was rewarded for it. In the last one I saw, Bray bludgeoned the rabbit with a hammer because he was revealing the secrets and what really happens in the Firefly Funhouse. It was Dean Ambrose. All these skits are all the inside bad stories you hear about WWE. The Firefly Funhouse is the WWE." And then he talked about he wasn't sure if Vince McMahon realizes what's happening or whatever. And he said, "The one video I saw, Bray's hammering a sign on the door and it says, 'Abandon all hope, ye who exit here.' It's threatening people. If you leave WWE, then you can abandon all hope. These skits, if Vince realizes what they are, I'm like, why would you put them out there? If he doesn't, then the writers are laughing that they're able to get this stuff on television." What do you think about that? Because it's an interesting argument. I've not heard it anywhere else. Do you think there's any realistic chance that the writers are having some sort of subtle jab?
What, at Vince McMahon himself?
Or just the whole kind of, you know, the different workings. Like, is Bray Wyatt having some jabs about, I used to be the slob, so I had to do the muscle man dance to get myself down to get a push, or, you know, ye who abandon here and all that. There is a lot of kind of ways that you can interpret it. What do you make of what Lance says?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a point there. I mean, you would imagine that Vince is aware of this. I mean, there is a Vince doll there. You know, so Vince is aware that he is a butt of the jokes here. He's got to be. I mean, there's a lot of people who are sort of seeming that Vince, you could say, well, he's out of touch and he's not really that interested anymore. And they always say, you know, once you've fulfilled your dreams, what do you do? Well, create new dreams. I don't think Vince has really got any dreams left for WWE. And that there, to me, is the crux of the problem. I don't think he's got any ambitions left as chairman, supreme leader, creative boss of WWE. I don't think there's anything left for him to do. I just think he's bored.
What do you make of the idea? Because there was the argument a couple of years ago that he saw Roman Reigns as his last big star to make.
His last big project, yes.
Do you think that's true?
Well, probably, yeah. It doesn't feel like... I mean, even with Lars Sullivan, who's now apparently sidelined until the end of the year due to a knee injury. Lars Sullivan was like the classic sort of Vince monster heel. He was the sort of person that Vince Sr. would have pushed and would have pitted against Bruno Sammartino or Pedro or Bob Backlund or whatever. So you really saw Lars as somebody who would be a classic Vince heel. I didn't even really feel like Vince was that motivated by Lars Sullivan, even though he had all those sort of hallmarks of the sort of, you know, the vintage, the Swedish Angel, or any of these old style sort of heels that Vince grew up watching, you know, and thought, wow, you know, because he's always been more into the characters and the wrestling. We know that. So I don't really feel like he saw a whole lot in Lars. I just think he was kind of indifferent to him. The fact that he was there, you know, just killing time, really, with the Lucha House Party says it all. So, it doesn't feel like Vince is really motivated to create any new stars or really build anything else. And that's what WWE needs more than anything. I'm sure lots of people are saying, oh, well, what's the solution to this? And there really aren't any quick fixes. You need a rebuilding program where you've got to rebuild faith, rebuild confidence in the company, rebuild stars, or really not even rebuild stars, build stars, because lots of them have never been built in the first place, but just make us believe in acts and make us believe that a certain act could become a star and can win and is worth our interest and is worth our emotional investment. And that's what we need. We need an overall rebuilding program in the whole product to really give it focus and structure again. You know, you mentioned, I will get back to the Landstorm thing in a minute. You mentioned last week on the podcast about the Triple H's road to WrestleMania. I watched the documentary on the WWE Network. Didn't really find it that interesting, to be honest with you. It really seemed like Triple H's existence just felt exhausted for him watching it, Kenny. I was watching, God, all he's on the road, he's meeting these people, now he's doing this. Does he ever get a day off? Does he ever get an hour off? Presumably he does. But I was just kind of exhausted watching it. But one thing did move me. They had some footage backstage at the TakeOver event of Triple H sat with Shawn Michaels. And they're watching, I think it was the Adam Cole versus Johnny Gargano match. I think that's correct. And they're doing all the near falls. And Shawn Michaels is watching it. And you can see he's just having the time of his life. He's jumping up and down. He's ecstatic about how well this match has got over with the audience. And, you know, there's that passion there. Shawn Michaels still has it. And that was so obvious there. And I don't think Vince has really got it anymore in terms of passion. I'm not saying he doesn't have it in terms of he couldn't do what I've just proposed, rebuild the company. I think he could. I just don't know whether he can be bothered. I just feel like, I think he's just got to the point where he's just thought, you know, it's like that famous line. I think it was the director of a Steve McQueen film. I think it was Le Mans. And I wish I could remember the name of the director. And there was a famous quote, and he basically walked off the movie. And the famous quote was, "I'm too old and too rich to put up with this shit." And I think that's what Vince has reached that point, where he's just not bothered anymore. He's not driven by making WWE. And I'm not going to use the Donald Trump line, but you know the line. But getting back to Lance Storm and the Firefly Funhouse, I think it absolutely does have a point there. And that's why what's appealing about this to so many longtime fans. It's filled with inside digs. But Vince has got to be aware of this because he's been featured in it. So it's got to be done with Vince's awareness. It has to be. And it is very clever. It's really sharp.
Well, the other thing I was going to ask you is, you know, you've covered Vince for years, right?
Yeah.
For decades. So, you know, I'm not saying you know how he thinks, but, you know enough about his patterns. So with Vince McMahon being 72, I think he is.
72, is he 70? Was it 45 he was born, wasn't he? So is it 74 in August?
Yes, he might be 70. Yeah, maybe 73, actually. Is he? Yeah, he's 73, 74 in August.
That's
so he's
right.
He's going to be 74 years old in a couple of months. He has got the XFL round two, because he wants to right that wrong. So I guess my question is, with AEW, when they start TV in October, if the TV does really well and he sees them as a real sort of TV competitor, is that something that you think would motivate Vince to change or to try again? Or do you think that he just doesn't care and nothing else is going to change that?
I don't know. I mean, that's unknowable at this time. I mean, maybe that will be something that will, you know, light the proverbial fire.
It would light the fire under the old Vince.
Well, absolutely would, yeah. You know, it does feel like the sort of the in, you know, circling the wagons in preparation for it with, you know, not allowing certain people to leave the company. And they had that line as well on Raw last week. Was it, what was that line, Kenny, about WWE being the only form of sports entertainment that's totally cross-cultural? Here we go. Michael Cole said it. I think he said it twice during the program. WWE is the only form of sports entertainment that's totally cross-cultural in every country in the world, including Saudi Arabia. And I thought, what a strange thing to say. And it's almost like they are preparing for the imminent attack of All Elite Wrestling. And there are certain things that they are doing to just brace themselves for that. But as far as Vince being motivated to really turn it up again and really deliver and sizzle and just make this whole thing sparkle again. I don't know whether he can be bothered anymore. I think he could still do it if he wanted to, but I'm not sure whether he does. Maybe this XFL thing will be a really good thing for him, because he will finally say, well, I'm going to concentrate on this. I'm still going to be involved on a lower level, but I'm going to let you people run it now. I'm going to step back for a while. I'm going to see what Triple H and Stephanie and the rest of the team can do without my direct, involvement or me steering the ship. I mean, I think that's what we all would like to see. And maybe that will happen when this XFL, when this launches, and that may well command most of his time. I mean, we'll see, Kenny. I mean, everybody's talked about this endlessly, and it's all sort of speculation.
Yeah, it's all speculation. I mean, I'm curious about the idea that, like, WWE at the moment, there's so much going on that I'm curious as to how it plays out for them, because there's the report in the last 24, 48 hours about the UN, United Nations, have now got a credible source that say that the Saudi Arabian, is it Prince, I think it is, was responsible for this, Jamal Khashoggi's death or murder, which, we all kind of knew, but there's now a credible source about it, which is not a great look, obviously, for anybody who goes to Saudi Arabia, and because now WWE are doing the propaganda about them again.
Yeah.
They are starting to say, how great a country, and blah, blah, blah. And then the other thing, I don't know if you saw this, and look, I'm not the sort of person that's, overly PC, so that's why, I sometimes think if it bothers me, then it's maybe something that would bother a fair amount of people, is I had a real issue with Dana Warrior's tweet. Did you see it?
Yes.
Because to me, right, is, look, I'm not, the Ultimate Warrior being a homophobe is nothing to do with her, right? I'm not going to judge her on his views. But to me, for you to go out there and say, I'm so there for the LGBTQ community and all that kind of stuff, and to wear his face paint, I'm sorry, but as another version of saying Black Lives Matter wearing a Klan hoodie. Like, it doesn't make any sense. He went around campuses in America and said all that, queering doesn't make the world go round. There's some very offensive language where he's talking about lesbians as bull dykes and stuff like this. Like, really horrible language.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's putting out that. So I wonder if, in 2019...
I mean, does she even have the awareness? She must just have no self-awareness at all to be able to understand how offensive that was, or how potentially upsetting it could be, or how it could be misconstrued. I mean, you might say, it's coming from the heart and she was entirely sincere about it. And maybe she was. But how could she not have the awareness that it would not be viewed in the same way that it might be intended because of the things her husband said and wrote? I mean, he wasn't shy about expressing those views, was he, Kenny?
No, and to my knowledge, he never backtracked from those views. He never changed.
No, I don't think he ever did either. As far as I know, he never did.
So, I mean, her doing the post, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's dressing up as him in the post, which is kind of, it's like a... So I'm curious, my point was going to be that I'm curious in 2019 how much that kind of stuff is going to resonate with the marketplace, with the audience. Are people going to be bothered about stuff like that, or are we just in an era where, corporations are going to do shitty things and we just kind of accept it? Because it's, WWE's in a weird position where it's, even if you go onto her, so let me do it right now while we're on here. I'll go on her Twitter to that post and just see what the top comments are on that post. Because sometimes you find that, there's a couple of bad comments or whatever. So if I go onto that post right now,
yeah.
I'll read the top three comments. There's a great gif from Rebby Hardy of a guy who's about to say something, but just is like, no, I'll not say it. It's fine.
Okay.
There is another person saying, wearing that face paint while claiming support LGBT people feels like a slap in the face. Honestly, please reconsider. And the next one is...
That was very respectful, wasn't it, that?
Yeah. And then somebody on a Pictionary board, as if they're drawing something, that says, the best time to delete this tweet was immediately after sending it. The second best time is now. And the third one is, seriously, come on, this is so out of touch with reality.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm literally scrolling down here. We're about 25 down, and I can't find one person who's like, well supportive. Done. Yeah, yeah. Nothing. And that's, you know, usually you get some. So I do you think that kind of stuff, because obviously we're seeing the AEW, what they're attempting to do is to be very inclusive with people. They've hired trans performers. They've hired, openly gay performers. They've got the culture thing, you know, the sensory inclusion thing, where people who can't go to large scale events, they have like an area and a section, and they get stuff that can help them be at these kind of events.
Yeah,
because I know there's a lot of people who maybe have like autism and different things who can't go to those kind of events. They can't go to a large scale event; it's just too much for them.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people, like an amazing amount of people, who just suffer from anxiety in crowds, isn't there?
Yes.
So there's loads of people suffer from that.
So do you? I guess my question is: do you think that in 2019 that kind of stuff does it matter to the overall picture, or do you think that it's just one of those things that if you're a WWE fan, you're going to brush it off, or? Could it start changing people's opinions if they keep seeing stuff like this?
Well, it definitely has changed many opinions. I mean, lots of people are upset about their involvement with the Saudi General Sports Authority, the 10-year deal, which they are now, what are they, like, less than 18 months into. So lots of people strongly object to that. I know a lot of people have cancelled their network subscriptions and don't watch anymore. I mean, we both know people who've done that. So as far as the overall big picture of will it really change anything, I mean, I'm not sure about that. I mean, you know, let's face it, Donald Trump's, a lot of people don't like that guy. Let's face it. Lots of people don't like that guy. Vince's wife works for him. And this has been going on now for many years and will continue to go on for many years. And it doesn't really seem to have harmed the company that much overall. I mean, I'm sure they've lost some subscribers over it, and obviously the Saudi thing has upset certain people, but looking at the massive big picture, has it really made a huge difference? I'm not sure if it has. I think, you know, interest is down because the product's just not interesting, and I think a lot of people can overlook that type of stuff or rationalize it. Or well, just
even
in the sand and say, well, listen, I'm watching WWE for escapist entertainment. I'm not really going to think about all other stuff. I think a lot of people have that mindset.
You know, I mean, the thing is, we've seen, I think everybody who covers wrestling has seen a dip in sort of like, we've seen a dip in our Patreon level. Brian Alvarez has said they've seen a dip in the Wrestling Observer level because there is a disinterest right now. And sure. That's across the board. And you know, to lie about that and say that's not there would just be silly, you know? Like, Brian Alvarez made a joke a couple of weeks ago that if they keep going this way, I'm not going to be able to put my kid through college. Because, you know, he's making light of it, but it's kind of, people are disenfranchised at the moment. They don't really know what to do. So, I mean, I get it. And, you know, luckily, the AEW thing is coming around at the right time. Because yeah. At least there is going to be an alternative. So,
I mean, historically, yeah. I mean, if the product is not that appealing, then fewer people watch it. I mean,
and you don't seek out more. You don't seek out more content on it.
That's right. I mean, it's, you know, and you look at WWE, and it's so frustrating because you know how dynamic it could be, and they've got so many performers who are hungry and who want it, and so many people waiting in developmental who could be stars if the machine was, you know, programmed to make them stars and to provide and produce, you know, a thrilling, invigorating product. And it just feels like they're happy with the status quo. It just feels like they're just sleepwalking through the way through TV each week. And just instead of building people up, it's like they're knocking them down. Or just, I mean, look at Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I mean, what a terror. I know they had another terrible week. I mean, how can you take those two seriously as star heels anymore? I mean, just on SmackDown, I'll just mention this. And in the main event, it was Big E, Xavier Woods versus Kofi Kingston and Seth Rollins. Hang on a minute. That's not right. How the hell have I got... Oh. Hang on a minute. Where was... No, I've got that wrong. Sorry, Kenny. It was Big E and Xavier Woods versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. That's correct, isn't it?
On this week's
SmackDown.
It wasn't it Rollins and Kingston?
Sorry, yeah. It was Rollins and Kingston versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Sorry, apologise for that. That was the main event, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. During that match...
But that shows you how baffling it is, because that match doesn't really make sense. So, like, why is that match even on?
Exactly, why is that match taking place? And it was a best of three falls match as well. Obviously, yeah, it was Kofi Kingston, Seth Rollins versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. I apologise. Kofi Kingston pinned Sami Zayn in right off the bell with the Trouble in Paradise. Just hit him with it from the bell. Zayn went down. 1, 2, 3. Kofi Kingston scores the first fall. Now, later on in the match, it's Seth Rollins versus Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens is setting Rollins up for the pop-up powerbomb. I'd completely forgotten that that was Kevin Owens' finisher, Kenny. Because when was the last time he won a match? I was thinking, oh, yeah, that's Kevin Owens' finisher. But he never uses it because he never wins. And in the end, Rollins pinned Owens. And you were just like, hold on a minute. So Sami and Kevin have just lost again. I mean, how can you take them seriously as top heels when they lose constantly? And there was really not that much excitement in the venue for this match, partly because I don't think anyone really believed that Owens and Sami Zayn were going to win, and they didn't. They lost in two straight falls. Partly because why the hell was this match taking place in the first place? And just as you mentioned, Kofi Kingston just doesn't really feel like a heavyweight title. He doesn't really feel like a guy who should be holding the title. He doesn't feel like a champion. So, I mean, it was, you know, again, it wasn't a bad match because these guys are really talented. But the whole sort of layout of the match and the fact that Sami and Kevin have got no credibility as challengers, it was torpedoed before it even began. And in the end up, you just look back and think, well, didn't really feel like Kofi and Seth were put through a test there. And you would think that maybe they would be, you know, maybe they would be in peril since they're both defending the titles on Sunday at Stomping Grounds against two heels that nobody believes are going to be Kofi Kingston and Seth Rollins. You know, when you analyse it deeply, the more you think about it, the less sense it all makes.
And it's all leading us to Stomping Ground, which, you know, just, I mean, we'll be covering that next week. But, I mean, I guess just to move on from the dread of the television, BT Sport did make the announcement today that as of January 2020, WWE, as we knew, are moving to BT Sport. They're going to air Raw, SmackDown, and they're going to air the pay-per-views on BT Box Office. Any further thoughts on WWE going to BT Sport?
I don't really think there's a whole lot to add. I mean, it's not taking place yet for another, what's that, is that 7 months? So it's not, or 6 months, 7 months. So it's not taking place for a while. I mean, they're going to hit fewer viewers because fewer people subscribe to BT Sports than Sky Sports. So, but I imagine we're going to find out the deal because WWE is a public company. So they will reveal the details of the deal. One imagines that BT Sports was willing to pay more money than Sky Sports, with which WWE had been for 30 years. So maybe the deal's decent. Maybe BT, well, presumably the deal is decent. And BT obviously thinks that more people are going to sign up for their service now that WWE is part of it. So, you know, we'll find out when the details of the deal are revealed.
I think when the details of the deal come out, it might shock people. If the real details of the deal come out, I guess we'll see what that is. But somebody had suggested, Stephen Ferguson on Facebook had said, it'd be good if maybe at the end of the year we can maybe do some sort of like podcast on the 30 years of WWE on Sky. I'll try and do some research onto that because I know that somebody on Twitter, I think it was Alan Cheapshot, who finds a lot of old clips a lot, Alan_Cheapshot with two L's, he'd found an ad from a 1984 Sky schedule when there was just the Sky Channel and they had 1 hour of wrestling on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. So you can go and check out that ad on there. It's quite funny to look at. 2 years on the air today in April 1984. So Sky was 1982 it started. So
yeah, that was back in the cable days, wasn't it? wasn't it? And you know, not that many people had cable. Someone told me that. I think it started in Swindon. I think about 82, someone told me that. Which seems amazing that cable TV was around that far back in this country. So obviously 84 it was around. I'm not sure how many people had cable TV back then.
Yeah, well, it's right. You can also, if you go onto Alan's Twitter page, you can also see him. He's managed to find an advert from Sky in 1984 promoting WWF.
In fact, it was Alan who told me that. He told me that at Wrestling MediaCon back in September.
There you go.
Absolutely was him.
So, he's...
I thought my memory was totally failing me this week, Kenny.
The other thing that's, I guess, a point of news for the week was not a huge shock that AEW managed to sell at the Sears Center in Chicago for August 31st for their All Out show. But the more shocking thing was how many people were in the queue. There was over 70,000 people waiting in line when they sold out. That's a pretty shocking number. I mean, obviously, you know, there is still tickets for the Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen because they've not really been promoted as like must be at shows or whatever. But they've done a job of making, you know, Double or Nothing and All Out be these big shows. Were you surprised to see that many people, you know, in line to buy tickets? Do you think they should have tried to move it to a bigger arena? And what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it is very impressive. I mean, it's like we know that you're better off running the event at a venue that you know you can fill, that you know you can set up in a way that looks good on TV, that you're familiar with, you know, that works for all the different reasons that certain arenas work. I mean, if people are saying, well, yeah, they could have sold 70,000 tickets, then that means that they would have to put it in a stadium, and I guess that you assume more risks doing that. But I mean, on paper, yeah, they could have sold all these tickets and it could have been, you know, a Royal Rumble or WrestleMania style event. I mean, that's kind of hard to comprehend. But if there were really that many people queuing up to buy tickets, then theoretically they could have filled a stadium. So I would imagine, you know, I listened to this Tony Khan's appearance on the Stone Cold podcast this week.
How was that?
And Tony Khan's, pardon me?
How what? I've not listened to it. How was the podcast?
Yeah, it was like a mutual appreciation society. You know, Steve Austin was hugely complimentary of Tony Khan and AEW and particularly Double or Nothing. He was just raving about the show, just talking about it in great detail. It's quite interesting, really, because he was talking about his matches with Dustin Rhodes in WCW. And it kind of mirrored the things that Dustin said in the interview I did with him for Inside the Ropes Patreon, which you can read. So, I mean, that was really, I enjoyed hearing him say those things. And Tony Khan's like a huge wrestling fan. You know, one of his all-time favorite matches, Sting's Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance at WrestleWar 92. And he's just got this, like, pinpoint precision memory of everything that happened and in what order. So it was quite startling, really, to discover how much of a fan Tony Khan is. Like, you know, as much of a fan almost as I was when I was a kid, you know, and probably you were as well, Kenny, when you were younger. And we're both still huge fans now, of course. And, you know, when we knock WWE, I just want to say this here, it's because we know it can be better and we're not going to settle for mediocre. We want it to be good and we know it can be good. We know it can be fabulous. And we know WWE's got the talent to make this show fantastic. Not every week, but most weeks. We know it can be better. So we're not just out here saying, ooh, let's just trash it. You know, we want it to be better. You know, but yeah, getting back to Tony Khan on Steve Austin's podcast. Yeah, he's a huge wrestling fan. You can see he's absolutely committed to All Elite Wrestling. And what Steve Austin stressed was he's a numbers guy. You know, this is coming back to the tickets and the stadium and everything. And Tony Khan's like a really razor sharp numbers guy. So you would think that if they really believe they can sell 70,000 tickets, then they're going to run a stadium show next year because there's Tony Khan's. He's sharper than you and I ever will be, Kenny.
Well, you know, I've still got time, you know.
But I mean, it was, I mean, I don't think there was any great revelations on the podcast. I mean, he did reveal that they, well, I think people already knew this anyway. He didn't confirm the night on which the All Elite television program will air. He said that that would be revealed shortly, but he wouldn't say when it was on the podcast. He confirmed that it was going to be a 2-hour live show in prime time, and that it would premiere in the fall. Also, he said that they don't really have any great desire to run a regular house show schedule. At the most, they want to do 100 to 120 shows a year, because if they're running shows that are non-televised, they want them to be big shows so that all the stars are on them. And it's not, they're not going to be little, you know, piddly shows in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be a show that everyone's on, or all the stars are on. And people, when they buy a ticket to it, they're going to get the full AEW experience. So you definitely feel like they've got a plan. They know what they're doing. They've got all next year worked out as well. They mentioned that they were planning on touring internationally next year. I would think if the ITV4 thing takes off, I mean, regardless of whether it does or it doesn't, they're going to have a huge presence online. I believe they'll run at least one show in the UK next year.
100%.
But getting back to the thing that, you know, if there really were 70,000 people that wanted to buy tickets, then you would think that they'll be saying, we missed out here, we need to run a stadium. We need to run a stadium for a big show next year. But I mean, a lot of it, as you've said previously, Kenny, it's all really dependent upon what happens after they start running the TV show. Can they maintain that buzz? Can they maintain interest? Can they draw, you know, healthy crowds every week, week in, week out, not just for 2 or 3 big shows a year?
Yeah, for sure. I agree. So we'll just do a couple of listener questions to finish off, because we have a ton of listener questions. We had a ton of listener questions yesterday for me and Sondra, so I'm going to try and find some of them for us to go through. Okay, so we will kick off with... I did have one here. Janny Cave says, what's the point of Shane McMahon, and can he win a title by the end of the year?
Well, I mean, the point of him presumably is that he's supposed to be this heel that people boo so that faces are then cheered when they oppose him. I mean, you know, we know he's supposedly is like a cowardly heel, even though he beat The Miz twice on pay-per-view and forced The Miz to tap out, you know, last week on SmackDown. So he's a heel that is there supposedly to shine the faces, but really doesn't. And as far as him winning a title, I fear that he may well win a title, and not just any title, the WWE heavyweight title from Kofi Kingston. I fear that eventuality. I fear that is going to occur, Kenny. What do you think?
Well, yeah, the worst thing is that, like, I mean, from what I've heard, the plan is going to be for Shane to dethrone Kofi and then Brock Lesnar to cash in on Shane and kill him. Now, I don't particularly have a huge problem with that being what happens, because at least it'd be more exciting than watching Kofi face Dolph Ziggler every week. But the problem, the big problem is that when Brock becomes the champion, I just don't want to see him against Roman Reigns. And like you said earlier, that might be the way they go.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping that's not where it goes.
Well, they haven't prepared anyone else. As we've been saying throughout this podcast, they just prepared no one. Who are the stars that can viably face Brock Lesnar and defeat him? There isn't anyone built up for Brock Lesnar, because it's like everyone's just been sort of flattened out rather than built up.
Yep, it's not great. Carl Pierce also says, with Ronda not coming back anytime soon, if at all, what are the chances of WWE holding another Evolution pay-per-view, and can it work without her star power? No, not a chance. Because without the Bellas and Ronda and Trish and those kind of former names, they've not done really any good job with the women this year. They've made most of the women who used to mean something not mean something. So I just can't imagine a world where they would do another Evolution pay-per-view in the near future. What do you think?
Well, I think they might have to. I think it's something that they may feel that if they don't run a sequel, then people will complain, and they'll just stage it in a smaller venue. I mean, you know, the budget for Evolution was like, you know, the smallest budget for pay-per-view all last year, at least in terms of production. I think they'll have to do it, because if they don't, then I think people will be upset, and they'll just run it in a smaller venue. So, yeah, I think it will occur again. Whether it's going to be a success is another matter. Because without, I mean, Ronda was obviously a huge part of it. I mean, she was the star of the division. That's obvious. Obviously, the Bellas, they came back. And, you know, they were effective in their little short run there. I think, hasn't Nikki announced that, or was it Breeze announced she's retired, hasn't she?
She has, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard to believe that they're going to really be involved anymore. And, like, again, with this wildcard rule, it's like everything is such a muddled mess that it's hard to really imagine any matches that are going to be sort of big enough to headline this event. But, you know, if it's in a small venue and it's WWE Network, I suppose it doesn't really matter. It's just like any other TV special. So I think it's going to happen. That's my prediction.
Then we have Kyle Sardines. What is the last babyface world title reign that you truly enjoyed? I've found Seth, Becky and Kofi's a bit boring. For me, I'd have to go all the way back to CM Punk in 2011-2012. What was the last babyface world title run WWE that you enjoyed?
Well, Daniel Bryan. I mean, I know it's very short-lived in 2014, sadly, because of his injuries. But, I mean, Bryan obviously was... You know, his title win at WrestleMania 30 was enormous. It was monumental. It was a shame it didn't last longer. So, I mean, I suppose in a way that may be disqualified for consideration because it was so brief. I can't really say there's any of Roman Reigns' reigns that have really, really moved me. I don't know, really.
I'd probably go with Kyle. I'd probably go with the Punk one because, you know, there was the stuff with Cena at the beginning. Then when he won it back from Del Rio, you know, the Jericho run, and he had, you know, he felt like a, even though he wasn't the top guy, he felt like he was a star on the show. And he was presented well, and he was presented as a name. So that'd probably be the last one that I thought was long enough that I enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, come to think of it, there aren't too many that really stand out. And what a sad statement that is.
It's not good.
Is it?
No. So this is a good... I mean, Sam Carter says, are there any dream matches left on Raw or SmackDown?
Well, there was Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan prior to this week's Raw. I mean, there are. I mean, it's hard to name any off the top of my head. I mean, there's got to be something for Brock Lesnar. And again, but it's all based upon the WWE system making people into stars over a period of not one night, but over a period of sustained push over a period of months. I mean, Drew McIntyre versus Brock Lesnar would have potential if Drew McIntyre was actually built up into a star. But, you know, and we're now in the post-WrestleMania period where he's never really recovered from that senseless beating at the hands of Roman Reigns. Just one of the dumbest things they've done all year. So, I mean, McIntyre versus Lesnar could have been big. I think Lashley versus Lesnar could have been interesting as well if Lashley hadn't been reduced to the level that he's at right now. I mean, we were talking last week, weren't we, about Finn Balor as the Demon versus The Undertaker. That's something that I think would have a lot of interest. I think people would really get quite, you know, into quite a lather about that. But again, you would have to really take Finn Balor and make him seem like a star. I mean, what's happened to him? He's disappeared. It was the last time we saw him. Saudi Arabia? Was that his last appearance?
Yes. I'm trying to... When is Finn Balor's contract up? Finn Balor, WWE contract.
Well, he signed in late 14, didn't he?
So he would have signed again in 17, I guess?
I imagine, yeah.
I'm trying to see if I can find... Okay, Fightful.com, they're usually pretty good.
I would say next year it'll be up.
Finn Balor. Okay, they don't really seem to have him. I mean, I would imagine like 2020... Probably.
Yeah. Says so. I mean, I know they're now signing their talent to
five-year deals.
That's right. But I mean, yeah, Balor versus Undertaker, but again, only if you take Balor and you shout from the rooftops to WWE fans, this guy is a star, and these are the reasons why. And it's hard for me to believe now that Balor can be elevated into that position by, you know, this current version of Vince McMahon, who just seems quite apathetic towards his day-to-day duties as WWE's supreme leader. But yeah, there are dream matches there, but it's all about the machine making them matter. What do you think, Kenny? Is there any dream matches for you?
One of the matches that I really wanted to see was Ronda Rousey and Asuka, and they've killed my love of that match. So, yeah. If they reheat people up again, then that would be good, but they need to really work on that. I mean, you know, you look at NXT right now, and we'll maybe talk about it next week more, but they're doing that breakthrough tournament where they've got all these guys here from the Performance Center, guys like the former Shane Strickland, DJ Z, Trevor Lee, Sam Shaw. In this 8-man tournament, the two finalists will go on to take over Toronto, and you know, presumably out of that we will find a star. And you know, you think look at what they're doing. It's so easy to just come up with something interesting, and they're being presented as, you know, they're showing you video packages for these guys, and they're building them up. And if it can happen down there, it should be able to happen in the main roster.
Exactly. I mean, how difficult is it? I mean, we know Trevor Lee is really good. DJ Z's a veteran. He's been doing this for a long time. I mean, that there is a very appealing concept. It's like, let's just put these guys together, and the winners then, they then are rewarded with this match on a even bigger show. You know, people will be chomping at the bit to see that. So, you know, there's no reason why WWE can't do these things. There's no reason why it cannot rebuild. It's just the guy in charge. The reason is, I just don't think he's that arsed anymore. I just don't think he's that bothered. I don't think he, you know, it's just that simple.
Well, so Liam Hall asks, what do you think it is that makes Kenny Omega one of the best wrestlers in the world, or do you think he's perhaps overrated? I love his facial expressions and his versatility in matches, but I know some people aren't keen on him.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it is, I think the flaw with Kenny Omega is that he comes across very graceful, doesn't he, in his movements. And I know he's patterned a lot of what he does after video game characters. And that's sort of how he views himself, as this video game character come to life. And he's obviously very precise and incredibly athletic, and he knows what to do and when. And I mean, the guy just never puts a foot wrong. But the only thing about him that I would say, and then really you sort of feel guilty about saying, oh, you need to do this, because we saw what happened to all those guys back in the 90s who were there really smashing each other with hard blows and really hurting each other or doing this stiff work. And you don't want to recommend anyone in 2019 do this. And I've got to say, when he hits the V trigger, that does look very convincing, doesn't it, Kenny? The knee does. I mean,
I mean, look, I guess I'll give you my take, because I like him, but I don't love him. And the reason is I don't really like one-hour wrestling matches. It's just not really my thing. I think 30 minutes is as long as I really want to see. I think that it's something that Jim Cornette said about, because I don't agree with what Jim Cornette says about Kenny Omega, but something that he said, I think there is some validity to it. And it's like, you know, Kenny Omega talks about wrestling as if it's his art form. And, you know, he talks about it in a very kind of artsy-fartsy way, which appeals to a lot of people, but also puts some other people off. So I think he's like an acquired taste, you know, and he is a tremendous professional wrestler, very innovative, very unique. I'm curious to see how he's going to do on a weekly primetime American TV show, because you can't really do one-hour matches all the time. You know, there's going to have to be more storyline-based stuff and more promo-based stuff, and I think that's going to be kind of that'll be what either makes or breaks him. I think he'll adapt to it and he'll do it. But I'm curious to see how he works on a week-to-week basis rather than where he's worked before. But he's never really been a week-to-week TV guy.
No, well, I mean, a lot of the people involved in that promotion haven't done that. So, I mean, it's going to be a test for many people in that company. But, I mean, yeah, there's nothing really that visceral about Kenny Omega. He doesn't really come across as as somebody that's more of a, as it, Connett's right, it's more of an art form, like it's artistry out there, and he doesn't really have that old school sort of brutality, even though he has done brawls and he has done some crazy stuff. You don't really have that sort of sense of danger from him. But I mean, he's been very successful, and you know, doing what he's done, he has a style that's actually dissimilar from anyone else's. So should he really be doing that, Kenny? Should he really be changing it so it's more like some guy from the 80s, or it's got more sort of realistic elements to it? Well, not really, because he's been fabulously successful doing what he's done. So why change it?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Who's the two last questions? We have one here from Mark Tucker, and he's asking about the you know, the idea used to be you would wish everyone the best of luck in their future endeavors. WWE used to do that, and he asks, can you discuss the future endeavor situation from you know, the idea that they used to do that a lot, they used to wish people the best in their future endeavors. Now they kind of stopped doing that, and now that they're trying to tie people up in these lengthy contracts, like the 5 years ones, will that build resentment or affect the build for the future?
Well, no one has to sign a new 5-year contract.
Do you think that's going to, is that going to hurt them? So, like, for example, if you get someone like a Finn Balor, for example, and his contract comes up and they're like, we want you to sign a 5-year deal, and he says, I'll sign a 1-year deal, and that's it. You know, are they going to have to start adapting because there is now another, like, for the first, somebody who works in wrestling said this to me the other day, and I thought it was an interesting, he said, for the first time in a lot of years, the boys have some power again, which they never used to have.
That's right, yeah. I mean, that was the whole thing of the Monday Night War, and that was why it was so great that WCW took off and became a success, because it then meant wrestlers had options, and big money options at that. And Vince had to start offering downside guarantees. I think it was Mark Merrow and Brian Pillman were the two. I mean, I know Hogan had a guarantee way back in the day, and as did the Warrior, and that ended up in litigation. But I mean, Mark Merrow and Brian Pillman, I believe, were the first two to receive guaranteed deals in 1995 or six. I forget when it was. I think it was 1996. And that was because of WCW, pressure from WCW, and WCW was now offering huge money deals to guys because it was finally making money. So here we are now in 2019, and we've got a competitor to WWE that can offer real money and stability. And, you know, I heard a little bit of Chris Jericho's podcast with Jesse Ventura. Did you hear any of that, Kenny?
Yeah, so a little bit about the kind of the idea of being an employee and health insurance, yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
That's it. I mean, I'm surprised more hasn't been made of this. And this was partly why I listened to the entire Tony Khan podcast with Steve Austin. I thought, are they going to bring it up? And it wasn't mentioned at all, from what I can recall. Although, seeing as how I couldn't remember what the main event of SmackDown was this week, I may be wrong about that. But yeah, Chris Jericho mentioned that he had healthcare and dental as part of his deal and was classed as an employee. And I was like astounded by this. And I think Jesse was as well, because he was really going hard in WWE. Why, you know, it's independent contractors. I blame the government, blah, blah, blah. You know, everything Jesse said, I agree with as well. But I was quite amazed by this disclosure from Chris Jericho that's how he's classed in AEW.
Well, I guess if Tony Khan runs if Tony Khan and his dad run a football team and an American football team, that's how you do it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Know, and also, it's like, I mean, look, if you're somebody who has kids or something, you know, so if you're like Kevin Owens or somebody who has kids, you know, it might be quite lucrative to go, well, do you know what, if I go over here, not only, because I don't know, maybe with those health insurances, your kids are covered as well. And that's going to be a big thing.
He'll have to have private health insurance, won't he? Because as a WWE independent contractor, he has his on-the-job injuries covered. WWE will pay for that. But as far as I know, they don't offer health insurance to their talent.
But that's what I mean. So if Kevin Owens' contract was up, for example, and he was negotiating, and then, you know, say the money was kind of comparable or whatever, but if he went to AEW, he was going to get health insurance included, which then, as a byproduct, his kids might get coverage. I mean, that changes the game.
Absolutely. And that's just what I was going to get to there, is that, you know, going back to WCW changing the game with downside guarantees and Vince having to offer them. Now, if AEW is offering employee status to its talent, and this was something that Jesse brought up as well, this is going to be very attractive to WWE performers, especially those who feel like they've gone as far as they've gone in the company, or the company's just not interested in them. And also, might this force WWE's hand? Might they have to start offering this? They had to offer downside guarantees back in 1996 due to pressure from WCW. Will they have to start offering health insurance and dental and potentially pensions as well, contributory pension company pension schemes? Might that happen? I mean, it's going to cost WWE a fortune if it does that. I mean, it's going to be so costly to them. But if AEW forces its hand, this is going to be great for all the talent. It's going to be a tremendous boon for everyone. So, I mean, I hope this does happen.
Yeah, it would be quite the legacy to leave behind if AEW were able to do that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Well, last question, bit of a pie in the sky theory, but we'll cater to it since he's a nice guy. Omar Sanchez says, hi there, did you see my theory on AEW airing on Monday nights? What are your thoughts? And what he'd said about it was, he said, you know, let me find his full thing about it, because Omar had commented about the idea that, you know, we don't know what night they're going to be yet, and well, it's probably not going to be on a Monday night. What if that was something? Do you see that as something that AEW might try to do? Might they try and go head to head at some point? So here's what he said. He said, after listening to Steve Austin podcast with Tony Khan and noticing AEW hasn't announced a TV show air date, is there any idea that it could air on a Monday? My reasoning would be Thursdays will be NBA TNT. Tuesdays are usually also NBA during the second half of the season. No way they did a live show Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Only days that make sense are Wednesday and Monday. Do you think there's any chance?
Now,
in a few years' time, even.
I mean, at first, I wouldn't have thought so. But once they've built momentum, and if they're drawing big numbers, then possibly. I mean, that could happen, absolutely. I don't see them doing it at first. I think that would be just too risky.
TNA famously did it, right?
Well, TNA did it in 2010 when Hogan and Eric Bischoff went in there. Yeah, they did it. Didn't work out very well for them, did it? But then again, WWE was in a much stronger position than it is right now. It was drawing much bigger numbers each week. And AEW, even though it doesn't have that many nationally recognizable stars, is certainly far better run than TNA or Impact Wrestling ever was or ever probably ever will be. I mean, you would have confidence in AEW making whatever it does work, but not that.
It's funny because I pulled it up here, and I don't know if this is true because I don't really have time to go into any further. But like, GeekWeek.com has said that on January 4th, 2010, Impact drew a 1.50 rating. Does that sound about right to you from what they drew in 2010?
Yeah.
So they drew a 1.5 rating and against Raw, so, you know, Hogan, etc. coming out, Bret Hart's return in Raw did a 3.37 rating. So you're talking about basically a 5 all in between the two shows. And now we're looking at 2s for just Raw.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about, you know, say there was a 5.0, which I guess averages out about almost 8 million people all in. I wonder when AEW start doing their shows combined, if we're going to see a big influx of new viewers. It'll be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, that is the idea, but you would think that they're going to go out on a night where there's no competition, so WWE fans will not be forced to choose, and they will also give AEW a chance. I mean, there'll be some WWE fans, many WWE fans, who out of loyalty to Vince McMahon, this is always something he did very well, especially back in the 1990s, there will be some fans who simply won't watch AEW because they will see it as being disloyal to their beloved WWE. So putting the program on the same night as Raw, to me, would then force people to choose. And it may then result in this huge audience growing, but also it may end up halving the audience or splitting the audience and both companies not doing as well as they could have done if the programs were going out on separate nights. Now, long term, once AEW or if AEW manages to build and maintain an audience, maybe then they would move it to Monday nights, because they'd go into it with confidence knowing that, yes, they've got all these people that will watch and they're going to choose us over Vince. So long term, I could envisage that occurring. But at first, I just can't see it. And that Tony Khan just seems too smart to me. He's a numbers guy. And he's going to be looking this, saying, we need to come out of this strong. We need to show TNT that they'd made the right decision investing in us. And that when we're in end of year one or year two or year three or whatever, we can then renegotiate the contract and get some real rights fees through and not just production costs. So, I mean, he's a numbers guy. He's going to want to maximize the numbers they can do out of the gate. I mean, I could be wrong, Kenny. Obviously, I don't know. But I can't see them going out on Monday night at first.
No, I think you're right. I think it's probably going to be Wednesday. Two last things I'm going to... Well, one thing that's interesting is that Tony Khan, I see a lot of people writing him off as going, oh, he's just a fan. And I think they're discounting the guy. Because if you look at Double or Nothing, you know, the success of Double or Nothing is not a fluke. They had a formula that they went with. They appealed to a lot of different type of people, and they did it fairly well. And I don't think that was an accident. I think that was an intention.
Absolutely. I mean, listen to the podcast with Austin. He obviously he is a fan, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's very helpful if you are, because then you understand pro wrestling. It takes a long time to get your head around this business. So I think it's very important for you to know wrestling to some extent before you get involved in it. I mean, yeah, if I would urge you to listen to the podcast with Steve and just see at the end of that if you still think that the guy doesn't really know what he's doing. I think they've got a plan. And I think, you know, after listening to him on the podcast, I'm definitely more inspired and more, you know, persuaded, convinced that they're going to make this thing work.
Last question for you, Finn. We're a couple of months out, but give me just a prediction. What do you think the debut episode of AEW's TV show this October will do as a rating?
Well, if it goes out on a Wednesday, I would say, because it's going to be very well promoted, and this is the thing as well, is that you know TNT's behind it. These guys have got fantastic sums of money to spend, so it's going to be very well promoted. I reckon premiere episode, I reckon 2 million viewers, maybe more. What do you think?
Wow. Yeah, I think it's going to do... I don't think it'll beat that week's Raw, for example, but I think it'll come a lot closer than people think it's going to come. I think in that first week, it could be very, very close.
Yeah.
In terms of how, because by that point, if they do All Out and there's the same kind of fanfare and excitement, you know, and I also think that I think Jericho should be the champion going into that first show. I think he's a bigger name than Paige. I think that, you know, you do a program where Paige chases Jericho. That would be what I would do. Because, you know, Jericho's the sort of guy where people know him. You know, he has a name from the biggest era in modern wrestling. So it'd be smart to have the belt on him, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. Absolutely would agree. And, you know, you need to tell the story. We need to get back to, you know, journeys and, you know, people striving to become bigger stars. And, you know, that's, you know, as I've said, I've used this one many times before. And like, isn't it bizarre that Glow is the damn program that understands what it's all about. In a nutshell, the money's in the chase. You know, that famous line from... Mm-hmm. Was that the end of season one? I think it was.
End of season one, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it's what... I think they can get close to 2 million on week one. Obviously, it's how they're doing on week 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Can they maintain it? Can they grow it? That's the real test, not what they do on week one.
Well, so it's, the test is also, if you even go back to, you know, it'd actually be quite fun to go and look back at that January 4th, 2010 impact, because what you need to do is when you get that audience on a Monday night or a Wednesday night or prime time, you need to want them to come back the following week.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think they'll have big things planned for that first show. I wonder where they'll do it. I'm intrigued to see what they pull out of the bag, but we shall see. Anyway, Finn, what's your plugs?
Yeah, my website's finleymartin.co.uk, as people know. My Twitter is @finleymartin. What's yours, Kenny?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or Inside_TheRopes. You can also buy tickets to Awesome Kong in the UK, Birmingham, Manchester, Glasgow and London at insidetheropes.co.uk/AwesomeKong. Please do come out and support us, you know, especially like Birmingham's a city we've been to a couple of times, but it's not one of our staples. If you want us to keep coming to Birmingham, come out and show us your support. Tickets start at just £20. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus content. This podcast, 24 hours early, weekly reviews. There's over 600 episodes of podcasts on there, over a dozen articles from Finn, and grows every week. So yeah, plenty to check out. Also, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. We are now over 83,000 subscribers. The road to 100 continues. We've got a new story up there about Edge sharing a funny story about Vince McMahon when he had to go to Worcester, Massachusetts and slap John Cena Sr. in the face. So there's a video for that as well. Finn, thank you very much as always.
Thank you, Kenny. I look forward to next week's recording. And spare a thought for me, I'm doing the Cross Bay Walk this Saturday. So hopefully I'll get from Grange or wherever it starts, Arnside. Actually, I can't even remember where it's starting. Someone's giving me a lift. It's about 9 miles. So I'm clueless. I don't even want to do this thing, but I'm doing it anyway because it's the right thing to do. I'll explain why another time. But yeah, I'm doing the Cross Bay Walk this weekend, so spare a thought for me on Saturday morning.
My one tip would be that don't bang your head against the wall before the fight. Make sure you stay calm and zen beforehand. Don't be like Big Bill.
All right.
Yeah, we'll be back next week to talk about Stomping Grounds and much more. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care. If I'm sad tonight.